This is a production of Cornell University.
GPSA meeting, March 15th, 2010.
All right, very good. We'll call the meeting to order at 5:22 p.m. Yeah, on the 15th of March, 2010. Yeah. So, is there anyone here who is not normally a member of our ranks that would like to introduce himself or herself? Go on.
Hello, I'm
Bella Purple. I'm a teacher of Cuba, and I am here for the spring semester. Thank you, Gary. Anyone else? Introduction? Seeing none, I guess we'll proceed with the roll call. Please state if you're here. Tom Volterski?
Here.
Jason Beekman? Unexcused. Chris Clark?
Here.
Nighthawk Evanson here. Brian Forster?
Yes.
Michael Genkin?
Here.
Erica Gutierrez?
Here.
Chris Heckman?
Here.
Ben Hefner?
Here.
Preston Mansfeld?
Here.
Suresh Murugasan? Excused. Disha Patel?
Here.
Unexcused. Sarah Petratus?
Here.
Leon Schneider?
Here.
Asha Sikora?
Here.
Ed Strong?
You got it.
Dave Walden?
Here.
Bernita Webbinder? Unexcused. Sylvia Stang. Unexcused. Very good. So I guess we will start then with the approval of the minutes. Oh yes, no we won't. Okay, on my agenda we have open forum. Are there... Oh, Sylvia. No? Oh, sorry. Okay. Sorry. She hasn't been here for so many meetings. I'm sorry. Yeah.
I threw briefly some email about this last week. The Center for Excellence is proud to be updated for its Master Teaching Assistant Program, substantial to the current TAs, the home of the skills, and the leader in the teacher of the field there at Cornell. It's a workshop, it's brown bag, to get $1,000 into a year. I was the first semester, they have sent it, I can testify that they do pay up. And if you have questions, please see me. The application deadline, that's one major basically, is April 30th, and I'm happy to take questions after the meeting or
whatever. Thanks, Chris.
I do.
Okay, Brian.
I posted this on the blog earlier sometime last week. The James Perkins Award is up. The due date is March 27th, and I posted information on how you can nominate someone for the Perkins Award online. Basically, it's an award for basically interracial understanding and diversity.
Thank you, Brian. Any other points for open forum? All right. Seeing none, we'll move into the announcements and reports section of the meeting. Approval of the minutes. Is there any motions on the floor at this time? Ben?
I've got an amendment.
Sir.
Discussing the Geneva criminalization resolution. It says that Chris Heckman seconded it, and if I recall correctly, it was crafting the second of the motion to table that resolution.
Where are you?
Top of page 3B have been removed. In fact, it wasn't Chris Heckman, it was Dean Pansfield.
Is that friendly? Okay. Very good.
Yeah.
Changes have been made and noted. Any other motions on the floor at this time?
Motion to approve the minutes with said amendment.
Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Asha Sikora. Any opposition? Seeing none, the minutes are approved. Executive updates is next.
Hold on. One second.
I have no updates. I'll skip on that.
Okay.
So we'll go to Vice President of Operations first.
I have two announcements. First one is regarding Resolution R8. So that resolution was sent to Vice President Murphy. It was sent to the Vice President of Facilities, as well as the University Architect, and last I heard, the associate or one of the deans of the architecture school has seen Resolution R8, which calls for a rejuvenation project of the Big Red Barn. Mitch, the assistant manager who spoke at the last GPSA meeting, wants to meet with some graduate students or members of the GPSA who are interested in their ideas for the Big Red Barn. So if you are interested, you can send me an email and I will let her know and we can coordinate something. Second thing is, so at the last meeting there was a discussion of Resolution R7 regarding representation of Geneva students. That resolution did not pass because it did not meet the two-thirds yes vote for a charter change. It was suggested that I write a letter instead asking that next year's GPSA consider that item on their agenda. And so I've written said letter, and at this time I would like a motion to approve the letter's existence and its material to be given to next year's GPSA. The chair... Go for it.
So is it approved then?
No, it's Preston just made a motion.
Okay. So now what? All those in favor to vote, please raise your placards. Okay. Wait. Now we're
4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. That's 10. Pass it down.
Okay, 10 in favor.
Alright, let's try that one more time. All those in favor of the motion to approve the letter, please raise your placard. And all opposed? Any abstention? One. So 10-0-1, the motion passes. The letter will be given to next year's GPSA executive. Thank you.
Thank you, Ryan.
That's it for me.
Executive Vice President update?
I'll have updates at the advisory body meeting.
Excellent. Any standing committee update? Advocacy, President?
I'm deferring the time to Arthur.
Excellent. Event committee, Suresh is unfortunately in the emergency room earlier, so couldn't be with us.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair, I can give an update on.
Oh, great, thank you.
Chris, so we're working on Dry Ball right now. We will probably have one more grad night out prior to the Dry Ball. We're looking at starting to publicize that the week after spring break, and it will happen the weekend after spring break. So we're just going to publicize it for a week. We found that that's effective. As for grad ball, moving ahead, no problem. The details haven't changed yet. We'll bring it there. I just know that we should keep on saying that date so people know. We're probably going to be selling tickets right after spring break. And a theme has been set, but I don't know if it's public yet, so I can't really say it.
Okay. Thank you, Chris. Finance Commission update?
Awesome. For one, I actually have something to say. The applications for summer funding are due April 2nd. The last meeting of the GPSA is April 6th. So that Friday, April 2nd is the last day people can get those in. Also, the last day to get any special project request or 2019-2010 annual budget is also on that day. And then planning ahead for 2010-2011, the GPSAFC every spring goes through and funds as many applicant organizations that submit who want money right away at the beginning of next school year. So the deadline for that will be Friday, April 30th, and those applications are going to be available at the following website. This information is on the GPSA blog. It's going to be in the GPSA info, and it's on the GPSAFC website. So if you are interested or your organization is interested in that, go there. The second thing is that the review date for this is May 8th, and every year the GPSAFC requests some volunteer help from voting members or GPSA members who are interested in helping go through all the applications so that it can be faster. So if you have some free time on May 8th, please contact me. Your help would be greatly appreciated, and there will be some drinks available. And then the final thing is that I'm offering a GCSAFC workshop on how to apply for GCSA funds. This year, the application is going to be an online application that is going to start a long-standing database so that we can keep history of how much groups have been allocated over time and how they're using those resources, and also so that groups better understand where they're, how they're spending their money. So I'm going to hold basically a how-to on applying for funds for those interested on Saturday, April 10th, at 12 p.m. in 153 MBR. So again, if anyone has any questions, please contact me. My email is there.
Thank you, Asha. Any questions about that? That's a lot of dates and stuff. Yeah, Evan.
Good question. Will you be holding another workshop in the fall as well?
No,
yeah,
not to my knowledge.
Okay.
And I will not be sharing that, so.
Right.
Thank you.
And for
non-GCSA
members as well, for anybody?
It's for anybody who basically is a president or treasurer of students who show up to apply for funds. Yeah.
Yeah, and I would... the May 8th, date, the review of GPSA, all the applications for next year, you know, generally review somewhere between 160, 200 applications for different groups, and it's really a great opportunity to become familiar with the funding process, if you're interested in that at all, if you're interested in being involved in the Finance Commission next year. It's also quite entertaining seeing some of the responses that people write on their funding applications for why they're, what they're applying for money for and why. So, let the minutes reflect the representative saying. Okay. Appropriation.
Okay.
Thanks, sir. it's good to hear.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Are you still planning to do an update to give us recommendations for Appendix A? I believe
Very good. Liaison updates. Do we have any updates from the EA? I don't see Ned here. So Ben, is there any from the EA?
I am not prepared for this. I don't recall anything that would impact the GCSA. Really, they've been working through a lot of internal kinds of issues.
Okay.
I'm sure they would encourage us all to go to their stupid hope activities, which is a luxury at
yes.
There's questions around that. Give you more information about that if you'd like.
Okay. Thank you, Ben. Faculty Senate, Creston, any update from that?
Nothing that I can bring to you today, but I
got
back to
the
Senate and
more people out there.
Good job.
Okay. Well, please see Creston for the juicy details afterwards. Essay. Is Roneal here?
Oh.
Jen, please.
Well, the essay
launch
website, so check that out. We're trying to make it a launch pad for undergraduate students, so possibly we can take those views from that, which we've discussed with the communication community. They are also just briefly passed a resolution to discuss defining the roles of college representatives, and so that kind of parallels what we're doing. And they're also trying to get college students to come to FA meetings at least once a semester, because you're having an issue getting AAP to come. And come to lift your spirits for now.
Great, thank you, John. And I think it's the Lift Your Spirits that's been sent out over GPSA webmail or listserv or whatever. Very good. Student elected trustee update. Mike Walsh.
Okay, as probably you all know, the Board of Trustees met in Ithaca on Thursday and Friday. I'd like to thank everyone here who came to the dinner on Thursday night. They did a fantastic job speaking. The trustees were very impressed by all the students who showed up. So thank you for attending. With all you guys in some of those events that you. Thanks. office of the board. Had a couple committee meetings on Thursday. I think most notably was the student committee meeting where serendipitously Jason Craig had our presentation scheduled ahead of time on dealing with some of the student debt here on campus. So the trustees were presented with some of the programs that Cornell come up with offers. Here is counseling psychological services, and a view of that, and of course, I have some of the time with that portion of that. The alumni affairs steering committee announced that Cornell Connect, which is basically an online social network of things for Cornell alumni and for students, is nearing the end of its pilot phase and will be launched somewhere soon. I know that the Johnson School and the Hotel School have been involved in the pilot phase, and students who have access to this alumni network. It's basically like Facebook for Cornell students, for Cornell alumni, so that you have access to other alumni, places to post your resume, curriculum type stuff as well, so that easy access to a whole bunch of Cornell events across the world. So look for that pretty soon. When the exact quantity of that, but I think that's of interest to a lot of graduates who are only connected with the program. At the full board meeting on Friday, President Evans gave an excellent speech with President Thorne of the Upgraduate Student Assembly to the board. We are also presented to by Dr. Chancellor Nancy Zimmer, the Chancellor of the SUNY system. She's discussed many of the challenges that SUNY is facing right now that parallels many of the challenges that Cornell is facing, especially in terms of state funding. There is a new dean of the grad school that has been announced. She is Barbara Newt, and she is also holding the title of Vice Chancellor. I think this is an excellent opportunity for the grad school and graduate students here at Cornell to sort of raise the profile of the position of graduate school dean. And what I've heard about her is an excellent academic support of graduate students. The most recent draft strategic plan was presented to the board, and this was summarily submitted to the Provost Strategic Plan Advisory Committee of Graduate Students on Saturday. So a couple of us have already had the chance to look over. I sent you guys a link to it earlier. Please take a look at it. Send comments to strategic plan in 2010 at cornell.edu. Send any comments to me. We'll be discussing in resolution 32 a little bit more. And we're kind of our concept body are going to go next. And finally, I am hopefully going to be finishing up sometime within the next year or so, though I cannot run for trustee again. And I'm excited about retiring from the student government, although I haven't seen yet. The student trustee position election officially actually started today. The elections are available online at assembly.cornell.edu/election. And this is, packets are available. Packets include a rules calendar in the term of calendar briefing. There will be an info session on Thursday at 4:05 p.m. in B12 Day Hall. If any of you are interested in this position, I suggest you come, and you'll hopefully be hearing from myself, the undergraduate student trustee at Craig, and hopefully one of our faculty or employee lunch trustees as well. Deadline for submission of materials, which includes obtaining the signature of bachelor's students, is April 1st. There is a candidate forum on April 15th. We're hoping to hold a closed at the barn. More details on that will follow. And voting will happen on between April 20th and April 22nd. And a week after that, I will be away from that. So that is my report.
Thank you, Mr. Trustee. So we'll go on to the business of the day. If there is no objection, I would like to move Resolution 19 to the fore of the discussion. So, and to allow Brian to speak on Resolution 19. Any objections? Seeing none, Brian.
So, Resolution 19 is in response to recent. Whoops, this is not the right one. Anyway, I'll just look it up. This is in response to the recent deaths of three undergraduate students at Cornell. Basically, this resolution is just a sense of body, sending our condolences to the student assembly as well as the administration. As far as more specifics on mental health, will be coming from Resolution 14, which I'll discuss when that comes up in the agenda. I'll yield the rest of my time to Ed, because I believe Ed has a suggestion.
Yeah, I just wanted to suggest that rather than making this the three recent deaths, maybe that we change it to whereas in the academic year of 2009-2010, the Cornell community learned about the deaths of several students. So broadening it to acknowledge the several deaths this year.
I will accept that as friendly.
And we would need to remove somewhere else to talk about the three Cornell.
How about the lives of these Cornelians? Yeah. Alright, I'll accept that as friendly.
Any other questions for Brian? Seeing none, we're in general debate. Are there any motions on the floor?
Motion to approve.
That's an order at this time. It's been seconded by Ashton Spora. Please raise your placards if you are in favor of the resolution.
Abstain.
Those in opposition? Those abstaining?
One.
I would also like to take this opportunity, since we did just approve this resolution, perhaps we could just sit in a moment of silence to reflect on the tragedies that our community has been dealing with recently. Thank you. Next order of business is Resolution R-12. We heard about this at the last advisory body meeting, and so Representative Stark.
No further comments. Does it change? Can you repeat? Yes.
Any questions on this on Resolution 12 for Chris?
Motion to approve R 12.
That's an order. Second by Dave Walden. Please raise your placards. Your favor. Those voting in opposition? Those abstaining? Very good. The chair will now recognize the representatives Strong and Manfeld for Resolution 13.
Well, I think Strong Arm didn't talk about this. So basically, this is the follow-up resolution to what we passed ourselves in the last voting council meeting, and then had the town hall meeting led by the advocacy group, which everybody knows that was a success. If you have got a chance to read the strategic plan documents today, for those of us who got a chance to read it over the weekend, you would actually see that this was a wild success. So the graduate students have been mentioned, and several of our needs have already been included into the document, throughout the document. In addition to, glad to say that the graduate community initiative has been directly cited in the current draft of the strategic plan as a goal. So these are very good things. This is already a success. We tasked ourselves with a follow-up resolution and how to further engage, and we were able to take a look at a draft over the weekend. And what you see here is basically we're aligning the points which are already in the draft and talking about the needs which are identified at the town hall meeting and through subsequent meetings thereafter with members of the advocacy group and the original authors of the past resolution. And then this aligns with what you might currently look at, and a couple of things sort of formulate them in how this can benefit
the graduate community and align with the strategic goals of the campus. Anybody else?
Questions? Sorry.
Very exciting. I think we had a very successful meeting. And we received a lot of positive feedback from the administration. Ken Clark has pretty much expressed that she thinks that the right to do issues need to be addressed. They're talking about it more. And so I think this is really exciting. I'm glad that everyone was involved with this connection, and I think, you know, so many everything else in this letter doesn't really close the book, but opens the door to a lot more discussions further on down the road and how we can better improve that, especially in my and academic.
And I just want to add one other thing. This also functions, remember, we're looking at drafts, even though we're in the strategic plan, graduate intervention, this is a draft, and can change this function. Because we've decided we've used exactly similar language as used in the draft, this can offer some cover to sort of protect the issues that are already coming forward.
Public comment on this draft could be open until April 1st. So, you know, I stated earlier, and the email I sent out to you guys, we will be accepting responses until then. After that point, the trustees are going to get together, and they're going to be able to ask us to workshop this down in New York City when we meet in the first week.
I would like to make one change to the letter. Under preparing the future faculty, graduate fields and departments should include PhD students in departmental decision making and faculty searches, not searchers.
That's right.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. No. Searchers.
It
should be searchers too, but.
Any other questions for the sponsors?
Huh. This is raising the bar letter. It seems like there's a lot in there, and I wondered if of the categories that you've identified, have you prioritized any particular one in terms of where we see us having more success right away or in the near future, and how much of this is sort of long term when you're asking your faculty?
So I don't want to speak on behalf of everybody, but my impression is no, we haven't. The strategic plan itself has said that the number one goal of the university is to replenish the faculty for the anticipation of their retirement degree that's about to happen. And so we have very much tried to focus, and this is a true graduate need, in that improving graduate student education to build the leaders and teachers of the future. And so this is one of the areas where we know that this is the goal of the university. Use of the language and formulated how graduate education can inform making that.
And if I'm allowed to chime in, we tried to, as Ed said, the strategic plan, that number one was the faculty, replenishing the faculty population. So in our letter, it's beginning with the graduate population. So just taking the same order and applying it to graduate students. And sort of when they come in, so the beginning part is the recruitment. And then the end part of the letter is, you know, preparing them to be either faculty or leaders. So sort of the progression of while you're a graduate student here.
I guess my response would be, I certainly agree with what both Ed and Brian have said. My thinking is that this is sort of, given the time constraints of responding to the strategic plan, it is a lot of stuff to sort of throw a lot on the pile. And I would hope that the next steps would be wider community engagement across the university to work through the process of how we prioritize and have a discussion with other stakeholders. So I hope that this is an ongoing dialogue. I think that was really sort of a key point in our conclusion and in the resolution that we need this in the conversation. We want to continue the conversation. So here's a whole pile of stuff we can talk about.
Okay. Any other questions? Chris.
I'm reading the part where it says under an integrated interdisciplinary and graduate professional student experience. The first bullet in bold says schools should be simplified and or coordinated to achieve critical mass, etc. Coming from a field that's been affected by strategic planning in particular, then I'm concerned why we have this point in there. I mean, I've read the plan and I see that it's there, but why are we reiterating this as a group that we want this to be done? I mean, potentially some fields will be, some students will be out of fields or moved between fields because of this.
Again, I would like to make a comment.
I anticipate this to be part of the conversation. This particularly is a graduate issue, so please anybody chime in here. I think that my actually drafted that part of my writing, and I tried to avoid saying eliminate, to plan using the term critical mass that's in there. So I think the way I look at it from this conversation is trying to direct this in a positive way, that rather than use eliminate, or simplify and coordinate, and that this would be the benefit of graduate communities. But I'm open to reworking suggestions. It's a very difficult point.
One of the things that I observed coming out of the trustee meetings was that everyone who was doing clarification and that was referencing strategic planning at Cornell were relating to writing their documents and some things that align with many of the points raised so far in the draft and then making it with their special interests. And that's what we tried to do here. We thought we were original with that, but apparently we weren't. So that was part of our philosophy in including that. I think it's important. I think we have a field system that's pretty good. It allows people a lot of freedom. But it's something that probably should be looked at. I mean, some fields are so tiny that surprising that they're still even there. So I think it's very healthy that the university should look at them in terms of education.
There's one.
Yeah, Chris.
So I recognize that there are benefits that we can have in consolidating perhaps some fields. However, I want to mention that as these field consolidations or mergings or whatever may happen, that this group is speaking on behalf of all students, including large and small fields, and that we should be able to represent those thoughts appropriately. So while I don't disagree with this point at its face, I feel that we should be careful with the process of this board.
Okay.
As one of the authors, I'd be very open to a friendly amendment adding a sentence to say something about how graduate students should be part of that process or part of that conversation. I don't really have the words right now, but if somebody can come up with a quick.
And I think that the intent of the document is to bring points up that should be a part of the conversation, that we should be involved in that part of the conversation.
Well, I think that it's strange to use the word critical mass and to sort of think about sheer numbers when thinking about fields. I do think that's more of an economic sort of aspect of it. Why not try and reword it in a way that sort of refers more to how fields can work together in a way, or how communication amongst fields can be enhanced, rather than making it a question of how many people are in each field?
So I guess that I would agree with the author at that point. So the reason why I chose the term critical mass is that it's used in the strategic plan. What we're trying to do is, without telling them what to do, make them realize what points we're reflecting on that is in there. So we're trying to work with the plan of this. So personally, I think that the critical mass term, although it may not be the best, it was chosen already, and we're trying to sort of draw their eyes to it. That's why it should be.
I mean, just provide some background, maybe I think I remember, and someone correct me if they heard the speech from Provost Fox, but when Provost Fox was talking about this, he was talking about specifically very small size. I mean, like that one field that had one student as of the 2008 October census. And so it just provides some background. I think that's what the critical mass was in reference to.
And small doesn't mean limited. I think we're trying to put these fields in context. Because if you're the only person in your field, you're pretty isolated. I'm very specific to make sense. And this is one thing that we do. The statement is trying to encourage looking at how do we get these fields to work in a new interdisciplinary university.
I'll try to counter that. If you're the only person in your field, then by definition, you're not going to cater a curriculum to that one person. Therefore, you actually have to go across more disciplines than somebody who's in a large field that has a prerequisite coursework to take. So I don't know if I buy your argument about interdisciplinary. I feel like those people might be more interdisciplinary.
Well, I think there's a lot of questions.
Evan.
I wanted to ask, I'm not familiar with the language. It says critical mass is an active strategic plan. I mean, specifying numbers.
Okay.
I'm just not, I mean, I think you can agree that one person is small, but there's five people, is that a small field? Or, I mean, I understand the fields like Turkish, for instance, are not.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're not ever going to have very many.
The plan doesn't refer to the numbers. The idea of the plan is that there are these small fields that there's been enough students to really bring in the critical mass that's necessary for that education discipline. So, adjust fields so they can better achieve it.
Chris.
I've been trying to listen to all the comments that have been made, but I do have an amendment that I would propose to add on to add to this bullet point.
Amendments are order this time.
Okay. Quote, we encourage the university to engage the GPSA and the affected field members throughout this process to ensure proper and smooth.
Could you read it slowly so Brian type it in the middle of it?
Oh, read it, sorry. Okay, yeah, I could alternatively email it to you.
Well, we're going to discuss it now.
Okay,
read it.
Just read it out.
We encourage the university to engage the GPSA and the affected field apostrophe as note that's a plural apostrophe. S apostrophe, sorry.
Yeah.
Member. Throughout this process. assure proper and smooth meeting of needs.
Smooth.
And I would say ensure proper. Yeah.
I think ensure.
I would say ensure proper and smooth.
Yeah. Proper and smooth.
Meeting of needs.
Can I make one comment with that? Nowhere in this document has the GPSA been mentioned.
Oh.
That said, instead of GPSA, would you consider saying the graduate professional population?
Can I think of
we have to see if this is friendly for this whole thing.
So that's friendly. The graduate and professional student population would be friendly.
Okay, and so, since you're a sponsor, you can say why this is friendly or why not.
I believe it's friendly because if the GPSA hasn't been mentioned, then we should be trying to follow the word.
No, that's fine. Mike,
I would suggest we try and summarize encouragement encourage engagement at the very end of the document. What I would hope would work here is, and probably this might be a little bit more forceful and help you out, is that probably the phrase, and I don't know where to put it yet, I'm still working on it, that meets the needs of all stakeholders. A lot shorter, simpler, more consistent. Deals should be simplified and coordinated to achieve critical mass of graduate students and meet the needs of all stakeholders in graduate education in a manner which encourages the growing necessity of interdisciplinary education and research towards the strategic benefit of the university.
All right, folks, I'm going to just copy this and put the next one underneath so we can look at both of them.
Yeah, all right. Previously, we could just accept it as a friendly amendment with the intent to have the student work outside.
Is there a motion on the floor to refer to committee? Is there a motion on the floor to refer this to a committee to handle it right now? So moved by Tom. Is there a second? Yeah. Well, I mean, we'll just vote on it after we discuss the next resolution.
I feel like that's
is that fine? Is that fine with the sponsors? Okay. So is there any objection to that? Seeing none, we'll come back to this resolution after we handle the next resolution. Brian, comments on R14?
So R14, which is not presented tonight, has been written, is in regards to mental health. So the Ad Hoc Mental Health Committee has been meeting for the past two semesters, speaking to Gannett and peers and basically just looking at what services are there on the campus for our graduate and professional students. From the last meeting, there seems to be consensus that there are a lot of services on campus, but as far as finding that information is a little spread out. So what the Mental Health Committee wants to do, and we'll be working with Brenda Wicks on her Graduate Student Life website, is to create a section solely about mental health, and more specifically, a section on proactive mental health. So not just the treatment, but what can you do to reduce stress and that sort of thing. So that resolution will be presented at the advisory body meeting, and I, you know, especially at this time, I think it's appropriate that we go ahead and have this resolution at that time.
Comment?
Huh.
Yeah. I think you can go ahead and make any changes related to mental health on this webpage.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of there, as you think about it. That'll be, I think, my opinion, given.
And we've already spoken with Brenda, and she's up for this, but we still want to have it in resolution form. But she seems more than open to us amending the website. And we thought this would be a better location for it, because it is a site all about graduate student life. You know.
And so speaking on the, does that all you have for that?
Yes, unless there are any questions, comments. So.
What? Resolution will be April 19th.
Well, hopefully, maybe April 1st, if that's
okay. Whatever. All right. Yeah, well, so at a future meeting, we'll be discussing the actual resolution. I just wanted to ask Dean Hubble if you had anything you wanted to say related to mental health on campus. I mean, I know we had that meeting on Saturday, so I don't know if you have anything that you wanted to say to this group regarding that.
Right now, we're very busy as an entire university trying to address the tragic deaths we've had in almost as many weeks. That is meant that the resident life staff have reached out and knocked on every door of every university room on campus to check on how students are doing. And while you might have thought some students would have thought it engaged on privacy, they actually appreciated the concern. There have been staff in the libraries in the evening handing out candy and inviting people to talk if they had concerns. So there was an offer about to reach out to students that way. Henry Chung, who is actually a psychologist at NYU and their associate vice president person for health, mental health at NYU, is here. He just went all along. Made a presentation to the staff this afternoon. He'll be around tomorrow also to tell us concerning how we want to address this. We consider this to be a public health matter. I think three suicides, or at least alleged to be suicides, at this point, I'll be investigating for telling that. Means that we really need to work very hard to make sure that the whole community is safe, especially between now and spring break. We hope the spring break will cause everybody to feel that we relax a little bit and do things that they might not otherwise have a plan to do during the semester. But we're going to be very proactive all semester long about reaching out to students, trying to make sure that everybody's okay. And some of you may know already that there will be an event on Wednesday between 4 and 3. These are my whole class that are on the Orange Quad, as far as I know. It's going to be called Lifting Spirits. That's another added part about students. It is being jointly produced by DSA. Has GSA involved as well?
I mean, we've disseminated information about over our website, only so we are not actually a partner of it. I mean, we've spoken with banks about it. It's been anxious about it.
It's the story of two organizations that's putting things together. Healthy Food is great, and some of the other things there as well. And suffice to say that we're going to continue to try to look after the health and welfare of the student and staff community. Great concern that this be the last student death that we have in this semester. Totally unprecedented that we've had a pandemic here. Of all sorts, we know that suicide has been an accident, some with illness, people had one, some with cancer. In a normal year, we have a fraction of this number of students. So I would just
invite you to talk to me or my colleague or Brenda about things you might we want to make sure that this doesn't happen. I mean, to me personally, it's sensitive, unnecessary, and tragic. And we need to go very again to avoid any issues.
Thank you, Noah. Are there any questions for you? Ben.
I'm not a DA, but I know a lot of graduate students are. Is there any guidance being provided to DAs about how to adapt grading or have conversations or other things beforehand? For example,
Laura Brown is sending it on sale with all of the advisors and faculty, and urging the students to communicate with the DAs also in addition to the students who may be in distress. To me, it's a step up everybody. It's about students who have to look after one another. It's about the staff who need to be there as a stable adult presence. It has to be about the faculty and the teaching staff who work with the faculty to be vigilant for all of us. You know, it's going to be a stressful semester for the staff because, as you know, we're going to see the mergers and departments, we're going to see some layoffs. All of that's going to add stress of the staff. So we have to somehow manage to remind ourselves all the time that we're communicating to look out for one another. And if you see someone who's in distress, if you're worried about, let us know and we'll find some discreet way to reach out to that person. We're not going to go barging in. You know, we're not going to have a policeman knocking at your door to check the welfare. But we'll find a way to reach out to make sure that the person who is in distress will get help. And if you need information, email me, we'll get it to you one way or the other. Somehow there's a gap.
Any other questions for Jane Holman? All right, seeing none, I welcome the the small working group that just left to rise and report. We'll now take up our 13 again.
Okay, so it seems that we have an agreement and attempt to keep the statement as concise as possible. We've gotten rid of the last extra clause and instead added a phrase in the middle that says, in consultation with stakeholders, this process will be able to achieve a critical mass in the community on board.
Right.
Both parties are in agreement with this.
Great. Thank you. Is there any, now, since we're discussing R13 again, are there any other points or motions on R13?
Motion to approve R13.
That's in order at this time. All right. Seconded by Chris Heckman. Please raise your placards if you are in favor of Resolution 13 and the letter accompanying it. Very good. Those voting against?
No.
Those voting those abstaining?
Two.
Very good. So the next order of business then is R16. The chair recognizes Chris Clark.
Mr. President, 30 minutes, hopefully we won't take a few comments and then have a few questions. I thought it would be a very engaging issue that people want to talk about. For and against, but also as well as between. Resolution 16, that's findings from a member of the working group. Structural changes to the GPSA that deal with certain issues presented by, well, more than the GPSA presented by this year and over the years, dealing with a number of issues, including structure, advisory bodies, and voting members, how to better create those two bodies, coordinate what it means to be a GPSA member of group, model rules, application, also responsibilities, ensuring better connection between voting body members and the constituent book and advisory council, and the I will add voting group has been comprised of voting and non-voting members. My comrade at arms down here, as well as TPSA voting members. I want to emphasize that the process that led to the resolution of the voting order changes is not arrived that lightly. We recognize that to
institute such changes would require a number of iterations in terms of developed to address both potential benefits and potential drawbacks inherent in any system of representative governments on any level. Speak to the institutional memory we have built the Cohen House on the CPSA structure to represent the input of all parties, but also to address what many here today feel the clear and present issue that's been on the docket for a number of years, both formally and informally, certainly respect the existing precedent in the charter and all the excellent work that's done in the charter both this year and over the years. And then just outline the changes and take any questions in terms of comments. The vast majority of the charter is unchanged, the vast majority. Each right to clarify particular parts in yellow so to stand out in contrast to what we had before. Main recommendations are spelled out in resolution in terms of merging the advisory and voting council together to a general assembly system of voting members elected by members of their field. In ways exactly the same as how people present their elected representatives now. An executive board of officers, as they are now, widened to include the vice presidents of various committees. We believe that this will clarify the responsibilities and expectations of GPSA members. In terms of getting at the changes, the working group is meeting over the last few weeks and months. We've given updates as part of the forum and on the GPSA agenda as advisory body and voting council meetings, and here today as well, and a blog post on this last week as well. We believe that these changes will have several advantages, more efficiently conducting business, ensuring that all GPSA members have some role in policy making. We certainly recognize that potential for more members, potentially more voices and more discussion, so we welcome that as an added addition. To recognize some of the patients associated with having more people here, if anything, in the meetings here anymore. Potential for more time commitment on part of members. We tend to clarify some of the delineate responsibilities for the expectations. We estimate only 5 to 10 hours per month for typical voting members who might typically spend, but we not estimate that I spend, and that's going to work on the listening. With that, I'll end my comments. Open the floor for discussion. I do believe that the vote, when this vote happens, is probably the most important vote, one of the most important votes that this year is to ensure that government is held by and for the special needs of the university. So long, George.
Well, thanks, Chris. Are there any questions for Chris? So,
how many votes amended to either the candidates amended?
Well, I mean, in theory, if you were to merge, right now, if we were to merge voting council, advisory body, it would be discussed about 70 or 80, and much shorter.
We have about 75 registered members of the advisory body now, and so under the working group proposal, all those people would become voting members, so it would just be the size of the advisory body. You could have up to probably about 115 seats maximum, because there's 93 fields in the graduate school. Some of those fields have two seats, some of those fields, if you have more than 100 students in the field, you have two seats. And so it could be a maximum of 115, and currently it's around instead a little more than 70.
Certainly we are very aware that if you see this go through, we have to really balance and retain and update with the members to take attendance regularly. If you're comfortable, the grant will be shown up the vote.
We're up to about 68 right now. Kristen.
I have more of a process question. When you were revising the current draft of the charter to consult the initial population letters that the graduate students have left the university, that posted on the website itself. It should be the letter that we have to make sure that all of that is included in the something I'm not aware of.
That's the March 1999 letter?
Yeah.
Referring to? Okay. Yeah. It's to my knowledge, the working group did not consult. It was not aware of it, so we'll be advised to check that out.
Ben. Just a point of information, I'm a little confused by the agenda and the numbering of resolutions. They're discussing resolution 16 to change the charter, but it's within the agenda of Article 15.
Oh.
I'm just confused.
I'll take care of that. Brittany and I, according to the resolution list, this was resolution 16, but when we put it in the agenda, 16 went ahead of 15. So that's the mistake.
So 15 and 16 are just
swapped. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That should be now posted online correctly between Brittany and I. We've done that, so I'm sorry if you've seen
the first version of the agenda, the two resolutions were reversed in order, and then we switched the order.
I have some questions on the website now. I just want to see, do my best to make sure I saw everything. The charter bylaws, you did say funding allocation procedures and other allocations. Resolution 10, updated GPSA action, GPSA report to the Board of Trustees, and then cap documents from now, involved up in time to their time.
I had to pose a question to Amy. Would that be on file at the end of the letter that's updated?
I'm not familiar with the foundation number, so I've made a note myself to look into it.
Thanks, Ari.
Just to clarify, I think what you're referring to is the activity.
The March 1999 one is referenced in relation to the activity fee, but I've never actually seen the letter.
Well, the letter that I asked you to say the power.
Oh, okay, now I know what you're talking about.
That's for the activity.
Yeah, that's a letter purely describing what the activity fee allocation process is conformed to, so that's nothing to do with the scripture.
But it, I mean. Article 11 of the current charter says that we would have, if you were to change the membership, the current Article 4 of the charter, you have to submit those changes to the president. So, I mean, there is that stipulation for those of you who aren't familiar with that section of the charter.
Right. I'll let it go first.
Hey.
I'll speak.
Just maybe so we can clarify for me, when we say that there's some and still filling of the field, we sign in regularly. This 58% of the people are regularly showing up for this 58% of the people have
more. My understanding is that 58%.
68% of the field have a member. Currently.
We don't necessarily have an active member.
I have not myself actually reviewed the attendance sheet. You're at the meetings. Your guess is as good as mine to the number of people that attend.
So then my question is, I'm sure you guys have had these conversations about, like, I feel we have some smaller groups here that are invested in active. What was the sense of the work about enlarging, groups? Do you have to move down the level of involvement that people have? Do you get members of the social life?
Chris, let me just say also, the rest of the working group, if you want to introduce yourselves, if you want to chime in at any point, because we're all back there. So please just introduce yourselves, maybe, all of you. Okay.
Am I doing that earlier?
So, if any of you respond, respond to Ed.
I'm sure you guys watch that.
I think that what's come up very recently in our conversations is that there is, as members of the advisory body, you basically have no power to do anything besides sending information to our members. And I think a lot of people are kind of yearning to be more involved in some way and be sort of incorporated into the process a bit more. And right now, the bifurcated system is really getting at that.
Well,
say that the current, my knowledge of 19 seasons Lord Council all filled.
Correct.
I mean, I do understand, appreciate the event, that we have at least five, four or five people here currently on the Lord Council that wish for a larger role. I think it'd be naive saying that everyone feels that way. And one of the biggest ways, especially to know that, is if the advisory board meeting
is. Yeah,
I do. I mean, I look forward to it. I cannot speak for 70 people I've met in my life. I know there are people out there who come up to me. We're interested in, you know, say, sponsor a big deal last time. We'd like to know more. We think you should be more warm.
Steven?
I just sort of answer your question. The thing is, we don't want people to strangle showing up. You know, they haven't found yet any other media for the show's going on. So it would be a very good thing. I think the changes will include a statute of payments. So they don't take a certain number of meetings and the visitors are able to do that.
It's the same as the way it works for voting members right now. You can get two meetings and they're not needed anymore. And then as a result, you don't count as part of the full quorum count anyway. So I think we feel like these issues would sort of address themselves if we had a lack of commitment on the part of some, what we're calling general assembly members, then they would just become unseated and then it wouldn't be an issue anymore.
I believe we had Brian who wanted to speak after that.
So I have two issues. First one is the issue of quorum. So right now you have quorum to be the majority of seated members. Attendance at meetings fluctuate, and I'm worried if that... I'll address my two concerns and I'll let you respond. I'm afraid we may get into a trap there. What happens if next year happens to be a low attendance? Would we ever hit quorum and would we ever be able to do any business? And my second concern is regarding the operations and staffing committee. It's, except for the addition of the UA, three UA representatives, the executive board is the operations and staffing committee. And why even have that? Why even have separate committees if you have an executive board and operations? Currently, for the operations committee, the UA is brought in only for voting on. Voting members into a UA committee. So that's all that the UA would do currently in the operations and staffing committee. The UA does not have voting rights to the staffing of regular GTSA committees or a non-UA committee. So I'd like to hear your comments on the quorum and your differentiate. Is there a real difference between operations and staffing and the executive board that you have now?
Thank you for your comments. Looking at the charter now, in terms of defined quorum is the voting council members we have here.
And I have that projected up here as well.
So the current charter says that quorum shall be majority of seated voting members of the CPSA. So we transfer the language over. I think attendance does fluctuate. My knowledge, extrapolating out this past year, if you tweak the current advisory body as a proxy for what the general assembly could look like, making judgment that looking today with what the general assembly would need now, we wouldn't meet quorum based on that. Now, the Robert's Rules of Order does specify that the voluntary body can make a rule for them, and correct me if I'm wrong, but that suits them. Whether or not it's majority or not, something I'm currently open.
I'm not going to tell you a number. I don't know what's appropriate or not. But I right now I. Part of me has a problem with the word majority. I mean that's good for this year, but you know we can't see into the future, so we don't know what next year looks like.
Mm-hmm.
To make that statement.
Like I say, I think the issue of seated members does something to ameliorate that concern. If we have a quote unquote low attendance year, members will become unseated and then as a result won't count toward the establishment of quorum. So I think, you know, you would risk having, say, two meetings at the beginning of the year where people signed up and then don't show up, but then it would sort itself out. That said, I mean, this was a point that we discussed in some detail.
And quickly, because there's a now less, could you speak on operations and
right.
staffing?
I mean, we are not interested in pushing management effort. We can do that. And the executive board and the operations committee do overlap in terms of officer membership, as you point out. We do believe the executive board, by virtue of consisting of these officers, both perform functions, the operations executive committee does not. The executive board does not set the appointments.
might discuss them, but it's not set to make it. This is the purview of FICA's operations and its respective committee. The executive board, just like they are now, are certainly entitled to speak on behalf of GPSA and issues. Certainly, the GPSA is a larger constituent, whether it's other assemblies or what have you, setting agendas and meetings. Certainly, that's the current thing. Proposed here would be whether we run an orientation session, such as voting on the numbers currently, before the next season of GPSA meetings, to get people some identifications and let them know what's going on. And certainly, the president, chair of the executive board, and the vice president of operations. So, we're not here to tramp on people's toes. We need completely unchanged as the vice president of the operations staff committee's review on staff committee.
Tom?
Yeah. I've read over these changes carefully, and although I'm not a member of the working committee, have responded to email dialogue that has gone off, has been had offline on meetings and so forth. I think there are real risks in the proposed changes being made, and the ones that were mentioned in the kind of the laundry list that presented now were time commitment, a larger body, and more members. Those are the perennial problems. They're never going to go away. The fact that in 1998 have the same problems as we will have under this new system, even if it goes into effect, to me says that there is no perfect solution. So I am interested in something that's constructively improving the body, but I would want to make it clear that there are still risks in this system. What we might think about too, and this is where I tried to think about it a little bit more, is how can we work with the interest we have now and channel it into our existing structure? And I wanted to say that I think the people who are interested in being involved on a more regular basis as voting members could be accommodated by the addition of more voting members. Previous to this discussion, there had been discussion of enlarging the voting body to be more reflective of student populations. Something that's not being discussed in this particular revision, but it seems to me, for example, if we added arbitrarily and for no other reason than we have interest, 4 to 5 new seats to this body, that some of the concerns about members who want to be involved can't would be addressed. I think the voting representatives need to be considered as to what they want to do. One of the assumptions of this presentation is that the 75 members of whom we don't know how many attend, but I think if any indication of last month's town hall we looked at, it's far less than that. And I did count a rough count of the people who weren't sitting around the table, and then when you add in the people sitting around the table, there was about 60 people at that meeting, many of whom were administrators or others who came with special interest. So what I'm trying to get at is that I don't think of the 75 registered members, even a majority, have attended any one meeting. I'm not sure how many of them actually would be interested in attending regularly. I think it's very well said that your quorum would sort itself out, but I don't necessarily think as a kind of a charter amendment or kind of a ideal that that's necessarily what we want to set up as a procedure. I mean, if it's even expected that quorum would have to be found through kind of people who don't want to come, not coming, then I think there's definitely still a problem with how that system is engineered. But I do want to say, if I'm going to admit it, since I like the idea of an executive board, I think that's a really good, productive working group. I think it's what a lot of the other IBD institutions do. But we are, among our peers, much larger than the ones listed here. We're going to have many more fields than our peers. And I think the reason why in the last 15 years this system has worked is that there's a smaller group of people at a much larger institution that has interest, I think, in the government. And I do believe that is natural. So I'm concerned with any system that would suggest creating artificial interest among 75 or 100 people. And from my brief period here, at least, I don't see it.
Thanks, Tom. With Evan, if you'd like to respond.
if I may respond to a couple of things. First, the issue of the perennial issues, the way that I read that particular phrase in 98 minutes, what they're talking about is not sort of a concern about attendance or level of involvement. What the concern there is about what exactly is the purpose of the advisory board. In fact, it wasn't called the advisory board then, it's called the non-voting members. And that's really the sort of motivating issue. And 12 years ago and now, I think the advisory board, the non-voting membership, is not clear as to their responsibilities, number one. Number two, is fundamentally powerless. And that, at the very least, is a sort of strange system of representative government. And another one was that you mentioned was the issue of the level of interest. Again, we've struggled with this because I think to some degree it's circular. On the one hand, we can say, well, there's a lack of interest, but then we might say, well, perhaps that's because of the things I just mentioned. Maybe advisory body members aren't as involved as they might be because they feel unsure about their responsibilities or about sort of disenfranchisement. And the final point, I think you said that we're comparing to the other Ivies, I think it's worth mentioning that we looked at many other schools that have structures similar to the one that we're proposing here, where they have voting members from all fields. That's the norm. We're the exception to having this sort of hybrid, it's not even fair to call it bicameral body. Penn has a system similar to what we proposed. Johns Hopkins has a system similar to what we proposed. So this certainly isn't out of left field. This is actually very typical for graduate students.
Now,
Chris.
Is it directly related to that, or is it just overall? Because
it's not this.
Oh, okay. Well, comments quickly, and then and then I'll just go back to the speaker's list. But it's fine.
Okay. Well, I'm hoping I'll try to make it.
Okay, thanks.
So I think that this is a very contentious issue, and it would be helpful for us to see as much literature as we can for or against this change versus other changes that you've done. I'm sure you mentioned that this is a very the change that you've taken with some weight, and we also ideally reform or just this, any charter change. So that's just one side comment. However, the advisory board members not knowing what to do and not having any power, the first issue I feel like could be accomplished in some simpler ways. For instance, I don't know what to call physical science. Let's just call it like a super field right now. If we had these super field meetings with all of non-voting members and voting members, that would, for instance, allow closer dialogue that's never happened before and would certainly make it a lot easier to get this done. And also no power. I think that these folks elect the people that vote on regular issues. Saying that they have no power is, I think, limiting, although the power comes very, very sporadically, for sure. I mean, only once a year. And just one last comment. I was in Cambridge over the weekend. I spoke with MIT and Harvard GPSA members or their constituent bodies, and it seems like they all agree that UPenn is the strongest system, and UPenn actually has a system that's relatively close to ours. They have more voting members that come from larger fields, like the physical sciences or the veterinary medicine or business school. But then they also break it down like professional schools versus research schools and all these other things that aren't really applicable for us. However, I think that I just need to see as much as I can about the pros and cons and different options that this committee's seen before I can make any other judgments on it.
So that we can move on since we're running out of our time on this matter, I'll take Dave Walden's comment, but maybe just to address your point of information, Chris. There's the Ivy Summit blog, which Ben set up for us, and I can send out that email address to everyone. There's links that Ben put to every single Ivy League student government, and you can just it goes right to their home pages, and they have the constitutions there, and so there you can compare and contrast all the constitutions. Every Ivy League student government has a system where all of their representatives are voting members. As you mentioned, Penn has their number of voting members is smaller. Yale's is about 100. Well, I guess they have about 40, and Yale's is about 100. And you know, the schools go from anywhere in between as well. So that would be a great place to search for additional information. Dave. Okay. We'll this. We're not voting on this anyway because it's just a discussion at this meeting. So let's move on to resolution 15. Brian has the chair.
All right, so resolution 15 is on Mr. Fuller's slip list. So, Nigel, would you like to explain?
Sure. My, the only thing I have to say about this resolution, if you've read it, I think it's relatively straightforward. Please let me know if you have any questions. This was a resolution passed by the student assembly, and Rami's Salem asked if we would be interested in sponsoring it as well.
I'll just open it up. Anyone have any questions or comments or amendments? Ben?
Is it appropriate to speak in favor against the resolution this time or after?
Go for it.
Okay. I'd actually like to speak against this resolution. I know it doesn't appear to be a significant water resolution, and I certainly appreciate the spirit of solidarity with the FA, but I've got two concerns. First, I don't really think this is a significant issue for the graduate student community. And second, the Faculty Senate already does it. I looked at Chapter 5 of the Faculty Handbook, which is published on their webpage. It says faculty members are encouraged to use the text requisition form supplied by the Cornell store. It gives the date. It says faculty can help minimize student textbooks expenses by informing the store well before the end of the term. So the faculty already are encouraged by the Faculty Senate to complete book lists in a timely manner. So I encourage you to vote against this resolution.
Would you like to respond, or we'll just...
Yeah, no, I mean, I just didn't catch the beginning. Where is the information posted?
In the Faculty Handbook, which is published by the Faculty Senate. It's on the Faculty Senate website. Chapter 5, under the heading book list.
So I guess my only response to that would be then, if it's something that they're already doing, asking them to reinforce the point, I don't think is necessarily a bad thing. Again, one of the reasons that I think it would be important to, you know, I mean, Ben says that maybe this isn't a huge issue for graduate and professional students, but I don't think that's a reason to vote against it. I think that there are plenty of students, including me for four semesters, who have purchased books from the Cornell bookstore. I think if this was offensive to the Faculty Senate, if we have reason to believe that might be a reason not to vote in favor of it. But if it's something that they already support in order to support our colleagues in the Student Assembly in making this point, which is something that's important for all students at Cornell, I encourage you to vote in favor.
Bonita?
They have gone through forms to check both things I do for sure writing for that. I think each department has their own mechanism for doing this, which does go through the chair, it goes through the DGS, it goes through the administrator, it goes through the administrative assistant. So I don't know if I think that this resolution takes all of that into account. And someone who does teach on Art of OPM, I do my best to give the appropriate list at the appropriate time. So I think that faculty members are already doing this. So I would agree again that this might be a resolution that we need to investigate more if the NCPSA are willing to go on it. I think we might need to take into account other things that we're going to pass along.
Motion to lay the resolution on the table.
Okay. Is any opposed? Seeing none, resolution 15 is tabled. Thank you. Chair is returned.
We now have resolution number 17, the GPSA Environmental Sustainability Committee. I recognize Erica.
Okay, great. I'm actually not going to say very much about this. I'm going to yield my time to the committee members, and they'll be presenting on this resolution.
Can you just tell me one of the next
Okay, for the past year, there's been a GPSA ad hoc sustainability committee, which has been working on areas of issues of environmental sustainability, and we believe that it would be beneficial for these issues to have an environmental sustainability committee become part of the GPSA charter. Resolution 17 talks about the necessary change that we'll have to go through. And in this presentation, we'd like to tell you what we've done over the past year and why we think it will be good for the GPSA to take us on board.
I don't know if you all remember me, I'm Billy. I'm a non-voting representative from all units of history biology. And I recently joined the Ad Hoc Sustainability Committee. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about what the committee has done since its inception. The committee's been very active. It started in the fall of 2009. And it was sort of started in, the Ad Hoc Committee was started in response to a demand by the graduate student body to become more involved with sustainability issues on campus. And at the time, there really wasn't much, and still isn't very much of an outlet for that. There's only space for one graduate student on the university sustainability committee that exists now. The committee right now has about 9 members, and we sort of represent the voice of environmental sustainability for the graduate students on campus. So, as I said, the committee has been very active since its inception. There's been regular meetings, and there are 2 resolutions that have been drafted, presented before a voting body, and passed. The first one is, you're all probably familiar with, the Lights Off initiative, to arrange for volunteers to go around and turn off lights on campus and some of the open buildings. That's in cooperation with the environmental advisory committee as well as facility management. It's been a large effort, and it's currently being piloted as we speak, and well on its way to the full search program. There was also Resolution 10, which you're all probably familiar with. This was the resolution to incorporate, for the GPSA to ask the strategic planning committee to incorporate the values and ideals of sustainability into the strategic plan, which is very important to identify the graduate students on campus.
And just an update on that, just in the recent release of the updated strategic plan, there have been changes to it, and they have added an entire section on the environment. So they've definitely incorporated this resolution into the newly drafted outline for the strategic plan.
The ad hoc committee has only been around since fall of 2009, and as you can see, it's been very active in drafting and passing to presenting and potentially passing 2 resolutions. That's, I think, a high level of activity compared to even some of the current standing committees. So I think that's one reason why you should consider making this committee a permanent part of the GPSA charter. Lastly, in addition to sort of the official activities of the ad hoc committee, the sustainability committee, there have also been less formal activities. So there's other things besides drafting passing resolutions that graduate students have become involved with through this committee. A couple of them are listed here. There was the Student Leadership Sustainability Summit, which was sponsored by the Communications Committee, which had several members from the Sustainability Committee in attendance. There was also members of the Sustainability Committee that represented Cornell graduate students in the Arbor Day Tree Campus USA program. So Julian's going to tell you a little bit about what the Sustainability Committee is thinking about for the future.
Okay. Well, not so much in the future, but what we're doing now. Julian's already told you about what we've been doing with the Lights Off campaign. We've also been working hard on the BYO Nudge CDIS project, which we've been hearing updates about all year. We're very proud to say that it's going to launch in the first CDIS after spring break, and we're going to have reusable mugs as the net cut down on the waste from the CDIS. We've also instigated composting and recycling at these meetings. You might have noticed our big yellow bins at the last advice body meeting, and I think there's composting here as well, that we go by. So this is another way that we, as you can say, can reduce our environmental footprint. And finally, we're also looking at ways to raise awareness about sustainability among the graduate population. So we're working with the graduate school to incorporate information about sustainability, environmental issues, into the graduate student orientation at the beginning of fall. Finally, we'll be taking part in Earth Day or Earth Month, whatever comes about, which is going to run for all of April. So we are taking the school committee a fair number of projects on the next. So looking forward, there's a number of things that we'd like to do that we haven't quite had the energy to get onto yet. One large group is enhancing relations with other sustainability groups. Big Red Bike has had a very good engagement with young graduate student groups, and it would be great to get some graduate students involved with Big Red Bike as well. Take Back the Cat is another example of a project that's looking at how to reduce the use of fossil water on campus. It's mainly being spearheaded by undergraduate groups, but it certainly has a relevance to the graduate community and graduate students. Other groups that we should be in more contact with are the Sustainability Hub and the University Sustainability Coordinator, as well as the Cornell Centre for Sustainable Future. There's a couple of current environmental issues that have been raised recently. The Marcellus Shale natural gas drilling in the area is of relevance to graduate students, and currently graduate students have written quite in the way of an outlet to talk to people about this. There's also the Climate Action Plan as for last year, which identified that to put this plan to become successful will require the work of a lot of groups of people, and one of those groups of people are the graduate students and the body. So we'd like to be a representative of graduate students in these issues. We'd also like to expand our current project and to start thinking about producing sustainability incentives in the GPSA funding process. So, you've heard what we've been doing for the past year and what projects we've been involved with, what we'd like to be involved with, and now we'd like to give a rundown of why we would like to become an equal partner to GPSA. So, as human beings on this planet, in this country, in Ithaca, as graduate students from Cornell, we have a unique responsibility to look after our environment, and we're no different to anybody else. The GPSA, as a representative of graduate students and professional students, has a unique responsibility to look after our environment, and there should be a representation of this within this body. We also provide a forum for graduate involvement in sustainability initiatives. At the moment, there's very little that the graduate students can do to become involved unless they want to join the undergraduate groups. And harking back to what was discussed in Article 16, it allows a conduit for greater participation among graduate students within the GPSA framework. It would also serve to establish legitimacy for the Environment Committee to become the committee which represents graduate students in this venture. We would allow to work with sustainability leaders, organisations and standing committees and create funding opportunities and incentives within the GPSA to really become a part of the GPSA rather than just another organisation. Finally, it would allow for greater continuity and momentum. We've had a great year, we've had a fairly productive year, and it would be great to just continue on through 2010, 2011 and beyond. Becoming a standing committee would allow us to elect a chair at the end of the semester, to become staff at the beginning of next semester, and to enhance membership and allow for greater organisation. So, there's reasons why we think that there should be a GPSA Environmental Sustainability Committee, and I'd like to open the floor to discussion.
Thank you, Julian and Billy. Does anyone have questions for the Sustainability Committee on the presentation? All right, seeing none, thank you. We'll move in, continue in formal debate. Is there anyone speaking in opposition to the main motion? Brian, Preston, could you please take the chair? I mean, you can just take it from there. You can just take it from there. I can just be all right.
So I do have some concerns, and I apologize to Ben. I don't have a PowerPoint presentation, and Ben wanted a PowerPoint for me. Sorry about that. So I'll try to explain myself. So I do have some concerns regarding the resolution as it is written. The first off, that there was a great interest in the graduate students. Look at the applications. There was only five that were interested in the position that Fred Cowart holds under the University Assembly. That is of some interest, but I would like it to be known if you look at the events committee or the FC and other committees, there was just as much response to that. The second thing, when you discuss Resolution R4, and yes, that was passed, and that's a great initiative, something from R4 was not completed. It said that the task force will report back to the GPSA in January, and to this date, that has not been accomplished. A few other comments I had. The first thing, there was a comment made in the presentation that other committees have not been busy. I think with resolutions. There are some committees that don't do resolutions, operations and staffing. We have no reason to pass a resolution. Appropriations, they passed a massive resolution, the activity fee. Advocacy just passed two resolutions, the one on child care and recently joining up with the strategic plan. So while yes, you have passed resolutions and there's no doubt about that, the statement that others have maybe not been doing as much, I have to strongly disagree with. Looking at your specifics, I have issue with the fact that your focus is to enhance environmental awareness with the graduate and professional student committee, and I agree with all that. Problem is, the committee is supposed to be working to address some function of the GPSA. What specific work will you be doing in carrying out with the GPSA? If it's just to coordinate with other sustainability groups, then I'll yield to Mike at the end to talk about sustainability groups. That is already established with the fact that we have a GPSA representative to the sustainability committee. We have two representatives to the Environmental Issues Committee. While it is under the SA realm, it is not some of the graduate student issues. If you look, it's to address any issues. Graduate students can come to the SA Environmental Issues Committee to look at it. So to have a committee for this coordination with these two groups, we've already established that. I would favor a resolution that would say, let's increase the number of seats on the SA Environmental Issues Committee. Let's increase the UA representation. Finally, sustainability is not a graduate student issue. It is a overall student issue, and it should not be within the GPSA, and it should be in the larger community, like the UA. And I'll stop.
A member in support of the resolution should respond, and I return it to
you. Please, Professor, can you just give it?
All right.
You can.
Okay, just to respond to your first two points, that the University Sustainability Committee was recently formed as well, and considering that it was so new, the fact that they had 5 applications is pretty astounding, I think. Also, I asked you for those numbers before and you did not provide them, so I was under the impression that there were actually more applications, although, again, I agree from the point that the committee was very new, there were calls out for applications, and they still received 5 applications despite the fact that it was so new. About Blythoff Cornell not having given any updates to GPSA, we have met 3 times now as a committee, and I have been receiving updates from Joylon within that committee itself, within the committee. So I don't know if it was explicitly that we would give an update to the entire GPSA or to the voting body, but certainly within our committee we've been receiving updates. And I have spoken to Joylon, and he will be addressing the advisory body with an update at the next advisory body meeting. The comment that we made about being active, we were just trying to say that, you know, we have been as active as standing committees, despite the fact that we don't have that formal position yet. And we've been very active also in comparison to ad hoc committees. It's not necessarily to degrade the work that other committees do, but just to show that we have been just as active as formal committees. Now, I think I have a problem with your fourth point, I think, is that I think we've made it very clear in the resolution that this committee will serve not only the entire graduate student population, but the GPSA specifically made it sort of this dual purpose that we say we're looking externally to what we can do to enhance sustainability and awareness on campus, but also with how the GPSA can, in its own functionings and operations and meetings, be more sustainable. And one way that we've done that very concretely is trying to start composting at the meetings. And I've already started talking to some of the other committee members to see how we can change the funding policy guidelines in a way that would create incentives for groups funded by the GPSA to act more sustainably as well. So that definitely plays a role within the GPSA, and I don't think we would be able to do that outside of the realm of the GPSA. I'm sorry I spoke really quickly, but I mean, I think I've answered most of your comments.
First, I apologize for not giving Erica the number. Secondly, looking at some of the comments in the resolution, I feel that they should be aligned with the committees that already exist. We are looking at make the operations of GPSA more sustainable. That kind of sounds like it could go with the GPSA Operations Committee. To look at the funding, that seems to be an issue with the FC, and I would recommend looking at the FC committee, and maybe perchance changing the bylaws of that to say something about sustainability. Third, I do want to mention something that is mentioned in the charter, and I do want to read it. To increase efficiency and decrease duplication, every effort will be made to address perceived needs of the graduate professionals, students, school students, through existing university committees and appropriate bodies first. While this is mentioned for ad hocs, I think that should be stressed even more for a standing committee. Finally, I did contact some vice presidents of operations who had this seat before me and asked them how they felt about this. And while we all agree that sustainability is an important issue, this does add more work to the operations and staffing committee. It is another committee. We already staff over 40. Committee, and we now have to explain what is the difference between the UA Sustainability Committee, the SA Environmental Issues Committee, and the potential GPSA Sustainability Committee. What is the difference to the three of those? And I believe, and now Mike wants to comment on the, that there may be yet another Sustainability Committee being formed. So again, I stress that we have sustainability committees on campus, and I would co-sponsor and approve a second a resolution that says increase the students' participation in it. You know, if we think we need more representation on the UA, let's ask them.
I'm not speaking so much to this specific resolution as to express that I feel having a group of people focused on the sustainability of GPSA-specific activity is a unique niche for the GPSA that isn't building a university right now. I think there are a lot of university-wide sustainability groups that address important issues on a campus-wide, but I think having a group like the Ad Hoc Sustainability Group to look at what we're doing and what our sponsor organizations and how we spend our money from an environmental sustainability point of view is really advantageous. Having the compost bins at our meetings, I don't see any other committee taking initiative to do that. That said, I also think there's a lot of opportunity for something like a graduate sustainability club as an outlet for a lot of these wider university-focused kinds of sustainability activities. But I do think there's a benefit to at least, I can't speak to what this body might do, but I encourage us to at least maintain an ad hoc sustainability committee to focus our inward on how we're being sustainable in our role on campus.
Mike,
so one of my many hats, the GPSA appointed me in 2007 to serve as a representative, as a resident representative, the President's Climate Commitment Implementation Committee, the committee was tasked with basically developing climate action plan and a strategy for how Cornell University should be more sustainable. And as part of that, and what I'm still being asked to do right now, is recommend to the committee and its predecessor committee that, you know, a mechanism for engaging itself in campus government. And in about a month from now, the president will likely announce the formation of the President's Sustainable Campus Committee, more focused on operations and probably to some degree education as well at the university. And there will be graduate professional student representation at that table. There will be undergraduate student representation at that table, as well as representation from other constituents. And this committee will likely, in the future, probably a couple months down the line from then, will oversee a number of other sustainability committees focused on food and water, built environment, energy, transportation. And I completely support the idea of a ad hoc sustainability committee right now for the GPSA. I think there's a lot of questions that need to be answered. I think there's a lot of stuff that an ad hoc group can be done. I'm concerned with the changes forthcoming in the university, with the implementation of this present sustainable campus committee. This writing stone of the sustainability committee is a little premature. I'm also concerned about the fact that we're soloing off our talent to focus solely on graduate professional student issues. And if there was a comment that the only option available to students right now would still be involved in undergraduate committee groups, I ask what's wrong with that. I've been trying to get the past to get much, much more engagement of this graduate community with the outside of campus. And I think there's a lot of ripe opportunity here right now for engagement with some of these undergraduate organizations that are doing a great job, but they just need mentorship. They have the power, they just need mentorship that I think we can look for. And I'm just a little bit concerned that this is one more distraction for all the goals that we're trying to achieve.
Motion for the orders today. Okay. I mean, I was just wondering, since we had a R18 on there for 10 more minutes.
Okay. So Chris Hecklin will have the last statement, and then we shall move on to the next.
I only mean to make one small point that I've served on a SA committee on IT for the past 2 years, and I know that it's incredibly difficult. I only know this anecdotally, but it's incredibly difficult to have have graduate student issues particularly discussed in undergraduate committees with all of the best intentions and sending in an email beforehand and anything like this. It's very difficult to do that. Like I said, this might only be anecdotal, but I think that looking at the SA or other governance bodies that help us
do a better job for advising graduate students on how to be more sustainable, for instance, is difficult. I didn't anticipate that being really.
Right. Well, I
only wanted to ask you that, though. You're actually going to have to call me about 4 times today. And so we're going to have a presentation by Representative Jenkins. Just some important clarification that was charter change, so we were only discussing that today. We voted on it in the next meeting. So if you had any comments or questions, if you had committee members who actually have offered that, then I believe they'll be open to any suggestions that you have. And now we'll have Representative Jenkins, the chair of the Doc Survey Committee, presenting the R18.
So, I'll kind of begin with discussing the motivation for this resolution. So, you know, one of the most important obligations of voting council members is to distribute about $500,000 worth of funds that we collect from the graduate professional students via the student activity. It's a huge responsibility. It's a sizable chunk of change for our students. And the idea is to do so in a way that's responsible, fair, effective, and efficient. Now, this is my first year as a voting council member. And I was a bit overwhelmed by the budget process. In fact, didn't really know whether, you know, on what basis should we allocate these numbers. The groups deliver certain estimates of how many people attend. But it's not clear, you know, I mean, the groups have a pretty clear conflict of interest in presenting their own attendance numbers. And I know of no public organization that relies on the numbers provided by themselves and the subsidiaries themselves to for allocation. And so the idea is to collect data ourselves as an organization, and so that we can make better decisions. Actually, there was a huge debate, for those of you who are not familiar with this, there was a huge debate about allocations, particularly certain kinds of groups, certain kinds of fundings, and it really came down to sort of empirical questions, just how many people use this service. Well, it wasn't a question of you can disagree with values, it wasn't disagreeing with values, it was disagreeing with information. And I think the best thing to do is to get information. But more importantly, I want to set a precedent such that other decisions that we make as a GCSA, other resolutions, are based on information so that we can go out and collect representative samples from the graduate student population to make decisions and make arguments to the administration if we want something, not based on hearsay, not based on some of our base perceptions, but based on hard data. So, one note about this resolution here, it's a little bit different from what was posted online. And the main difference is that I actually got in contact with the SRI, which is the Survey Research Institute of Cornell. And there's a way for them to do the survey for us. We can, in fact, contract this out and do all kinds of surveys and all sorts of things. The advantage of this is that, you know, there's certain confidentiality standards that they observe that we would not be able to observe and, you know, kind of the labor would be saved. So, one of the things, maybe I'll explain sort of how the numbers actually pan out once we get into. How much time do I have?
There's 5 minutes left in the meeting.
5 minutes left. Okay. So, maybe I think it's probably fair to discuss a little bit as to how these numbers, you know, why the numbers are the way they, you know, where does this $2,750 figure come from? So to do this, I don't want to get too technical here, but I want to explain a little bit about how data collection is done in the social sciences. So one of the key criteria is that we get a sample that's representative of the student population. To do so, one of the key things that you want is you want a high response rate, and you don't want to have a difference between the respondents and the non-respondents. This is sort of a thing that survey administrators really worry about, because if let's say you survey the entire 7,602 students at Cornell, you send them a survey and you get them back, you're going to get a huge, you're going to have a huge selection of the people who actually respond. And there's no way we can make generalizations based on that data. So instead,
one of the things that people worry about is the teenager not responding models, and they try to lower the response rate as much as they can. So really, the original figure, this actually is significantly lower. This is after the conversation I had with the person in charge of SRI. Turns out we don't need to pay respondents anything at all, with one caveat. Turns out that they've actually done graduate surveys where the initial response rate was very high. What we do need to spend money on is something called respondent recovery, basically it's called refusal conversion fees. That's individuals who did not respond the first time, and you contact them again, and incentivize them so they can respond to the survey. Those people are critical for the validity of the survey, and the bulk of the money will go to that. If it turns out a lot of students respond, then a huge part of that $2,750 figure is going to go back to the finance committee. In fact, so money is being taken out of the finance committee. About 600. So depending on how many questions we submit, SRI charges about $500 to $700. The remainder will be sort of
I'm going to interrupt here. Due to time constraints, we're either going to have to lay this resolution on the table to be considered at a later date, or else we're going to have to extend the demo to extend the meeting.
Can I move to extend the meeting? We have a reserve from the assembly's office here.
Okay, so what time would you like to extend the
motion to
okay. Do I have a second?
Second.
Any opposed? The motion passes.
So basically the bulk of the funds are kind of a cushion, basically the insurance deficit fund. So it's possible that most of the money will not even be spent, but you need this cushion to ensure that you need to survey it. And if you have any particular questions or details, then you have to respond.
So now we move into a formal debate. Is there any member of the body that wishes to speak in opposition to the current resolution? You have about 2 minutes.
Okay, so I do have to say that unfortunately I do not support this resolution. One, and part of my time I will yield to Ari, but because the GPSA SC charter states that the GPSA SC cannot fund GPSA. Byline funded organization of which the GPSA is such an organization. And second, I feel that, as well as Ari does, that this sets a bad precedent for taking money out of the FC for the GPSA business that should be allocated within our funds. I mean, one prime example of this is that the FC doesn't even take its administrative budget out of the funds that are used to allocate for students. That budget is actually given from the GPSA to my committee. So given that we don't even fund ourselves through the money, if I can't endorse funding a survey with the GPSA money. And with that, I yield the rest of my time to Ari.
Well, I don't have a whole lot to add to that right now, but I wanted to be here to answer questions that people might have about background or GPSAFC and GPSA in general. I do think that the idea of having richer data about how graduate students use byline funding is an excellent goal. I have a lot of questions about this resolution. There seem to be a number of issues in reappropriating GPSAFC money to any program that isn't addressed with GPSAFC funding guidelines. So I think I have questions about how that could be addressed in the resolution. For instance, GPSAFC, because I think it's a good thing fund to Cornell employees, Cornell students,
alumni,
Asha mentioned also that it's explicitly charged to fund non-violent other organizations, because it's going to PSA, which is a violent organization.
Derek?
Yes. The charter. In the GPSA charter, it under the charge of the Finance Commission, it's written that that the GPSA should fund all, should take care of funding all non-byline funded organizations. It doesn't say anything about byline funded organizations. It simply says it should fund non-byline organizations. In the funding guidelines of the GPSAC, it doesn't actually say, all it says is that it should fund student organizations, organizations that are registered with the Student Activities Office. And so I don't really buy the argument. I don't understand the argument that the what we're requesting the funds for funding is not... it is against the bylaws or the funding guidelines of the charter.
I'd be interested to see more of the cost breakdown, because right now it seems like the ceiling amount of these funding is 2750, right? But then I know I've talked with some people before, what you're saying is $10 for people that don't respond. If you want a high representative rate, that might equate to a lot of money if you're doing this on a yearly basis.
That could be get more information on total costs. That would help me and a lot of people here. Sure. So the idea is that with the present resolution, this is one one-year service, not so the idea is there's basically a platform you can put with the K through SRI. It's about $500 to $700, depending on the question you ask. The remainder is used for non-response. So if we get to the money we're doing, if you want to have a cushion of about $225, so that's what this is based on. It is unlikely, it's highly unlikely that the entire person would absorb, but that's what she recommends.
Motion to lay on the table and to adjourn.
Second motion on the table to lay on the table. Second by Asia. Any opposed?
Yes.
So we have single opposed, so all in favor?
Eight.
All right, and that is a motion to lay it on the table and also to adjourn. So we are adjourned. And
7:20.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.